This podcast is brought to you by Joy sponsor Pam Ann.
Hello, Melbourne. It's Pam Ann here. I'm so excited. I'm going to be touching down at the Comedy Theatre in August. See you soon. I love you, Melbourne. Mwah.
Set to land in Melbourne this August for two hilarious shows, Friday, August 24 and Saturday, August 25. Get your tickets now at ticketmaster.com.au.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Tomorrow is Anzac Day, a national day of remembrance in Australia and New Zealand that broadly commemorates all Australians and New Zealanders who have served and died in all wars, conflicts and peacekeeping operations, and the contribution and suffering of all those who have served. In dawn services around the country, people come together and pay their respects. And in the past few years, Anzac events have become increasingly inclusive of minority groups. After these services, rainbow wreaths are now laying to represent the diversity of those who have fallen. And Darcy Meehan spoke to Stuart Martin, the Victorian Coordinator for DEFCLIS, the Australian Defence LGBTI Information Service, about the importance of the rainbow wreaths.
We started laying a rainbow wreath, I'd say maybe 3-4 years ago, if my memory serves me correctly. It was something that was picked up in some research that Dr. Noah Reisman did. There was a group of Air Force people who tried to lay a wreath in the early 1980s in Melbourne. And an odious little man called Bruce Ruxton, who was the flag president of the RSL at that time, stopped them, actively interfered with them laying a wreath on Anzac Day. And Noah came across that, one of the people who organised that and tried to lay the wreath 3-4 years ago in one of his research projects. And it triggered, in talking to Noah about that, what we could do from DEFCLIS, because we really hadn't looked at organising around and being at Anzac Day and laying a wreath and going to dawn service. A lot of us would go as individuals, but never as a group. I had the idea of saying, well, okay, how can we honour not only those four or so people who tried to do in the early 80s, but how do we also honour and remember the multitude of LGBTI people who've served in silence for many years, right from the Boer War onwards. You'll hear people like Bruce Ruxton in the past making statements about there are no homosexuals in the military. Well, Patrick White, a famous Nobel Prize winning Australian author, served in the Australian Air Force in the Second World War as an intelligence officer. So there's one clear example, but there are a multitude of people who served in silence. The laying the wreath was a visible sign for us to not only remember the actions of those four who bravely decided to do it in the past, but also it becomes a enduring thing that we do as an organisation to subtly highlight the serving in silence of all those people who went before us. And it's a visual reminder, so hence the rainbow-coloured wreath. If you ever go to Anzac Day and see a cenotaph, you'll see wreaths, and they're all pretty much a standard colour and a standard design. We thought, how do we best stand out subtly? We didn't want to make a fuss or a scene, but we felt, okay, how do we make that visible? And the rainbow wreath was that mechanism to do that. We have a gathering at most of the major capital cities at the cenotaph for dawn service, and that's quite an important thing for someone who's served in the military. And then we lay a wreath usually later on, so a couple of hours later, at the point where you can lay a wreath at the cenotaph. So each capital city has a slight different time span depending on how the design of the day is. We want to be subtle, reverent, and give people the opportunity to remember the sacrifice that went before them that was done in silence. It's about paying a debt back.
That's one of the things that I wanted to touch on, is a lack of acknowledgement. I've got a quote from Dan Tehum, the Minister of Veteran Affairs, just talking about how women were acknowledged back in the day. He said many of the female veterans were observed that when they wore their medals in public, people assumed that they were wearing the medals of their father or their grandfather. Even though these people served, they weren't acknowledged as service members. Is it similar within the LGBT community with a lack of acknowledgement? People don't really perceive that community as a big part of the armed services.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment to make. Because you're invisible, because you have to be invisible, because if you found out, in modern times you were kicked out. So those rules were less rigid during the First World War and the Second World War, when manpower was incredibly short. shortcuts were taken officially. You know, you could enlist at younger age and people just turned a blind eye. You were a strapping, fit young man, so to speak. Because of the severe shortage of men, gay and lesbian people did go off to war. And some of those people had very open relationships. And I use Patrick White as an example again. His long-standing partner, he met during the battle in Greece. And it was reasonably open that people knew his relationship. It's not to say that everyone had that ability. Once you came back to Australia after the war, if you were lucky to come back, most people settled down, got married and lived their life, and the war was become a memory. But for gay and lesbian people, it's much like the experience of a lot of Aboriginals experienced when they served. They went back to a society that had not changed and had not accepted their service and validated their service and gave it due deference. You had to slip back into the shadows again because, you know, being a homosexual was a dirty, foul, disgusting thing from people, some people's perspectives in society in those days. So it didn't matter that you'd risked your life to serve your country because you were seen as unworthy. And I think the analogy is better for, to draw that to what Aboriginals experienced and to some extent what women experienced when men came back from the war. They suddenly found that although they were highly skilled and very capable, suddenly they found themselves back home having children, not being able to continue the life they had led in the war and not being honoured for it, because I think this is the hyper-masculinity aspect. You know, we don't trumpet that we're a warrior race, because I don't think we are, but at times it creeps in, that the footy attitude, that sort of weird mateship that occurs in football teams. We focus on what males do, male-dominated society. You know, we don't laud and laurel the efforts of women or minorities in this country very well because of that blokey culture we have. So those are the factors that affect why people aren't acknowledged. There's been no apology offered by the ADF or the government for those people who were kicked out of the ADF for the sheer fact only that they were gay. We need to remember that the laws of the land at the time, certainly towards the end of the military ban, was it was quite acceptable and legal to be gay in Australia, but you couldn't be gay in the military. So those things are things that need to be progressed and discussed in the future. But it was pretty difficult to come back from an environment where you're accepted to suddenly when you're not. Being open in the 1940s and 50s and 60s meant that you lost your job, meant that you lost your house, meant that your family didn't talk to you. And we know that occurs to some extent nowadays in society, but nowhere near as significantly and in sense of total destruction of your life somewhat.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.